All right, we're back once again for volume two of our discussion about mind management by Matt Kent. I'm joined here by Tim Benson and Jeff Lawler, and volume two is called The Futurist. And Jeff, why don't you tell us a little bit about who The Futurist is?
The Futurist is one of our kind of our main kind of secondary cast members. It's Duncan, who, I mean, he's got this ability. He can basically see into the future about 15 minutes. And so he can effectively, it makes him more or less invincible when he's fighting, which is a really cool power. He's also got this kind of detective noir vibe about him, which I think is a kind of pulls the series in kind of an interesting tonal direction. So yeah, I think he's one of my favorite characters, you know, probably of all the secondary characters. Mm-hmm. I really, really enjoy him.
Yeah, for sure. And I thought his power, and it's Matt kind of does this sometimes with these powers, because sometimes I think the powers are a little kind of vague. Like, okay, he can see into the future, but he's not really seeing into the future. He's just really reading people's minds around him. Fine, you can read the minds of pigeons or whatever around you. How does that tell you 15 minutes? I've known pigeons. They're not great planners. I'm not going to lie to you. They're pretty spur of the moment, but it works for the sake of the story, and I think that's pretty cool. And we spend in the volume itself, there's a prologue that tells you about him, and maybe that was contained in other volumes.
Yep. The Dark Horse Presents backup.
Yeah. And one of the things he does with this is kind of a mind management type power as much as it is the futurist power, which is he's able to convince you that he is able to kill you just by touching you. And if he can convince you that he can kill you by touching you, then when he does it, when he touches you, it's your own mind that actually then shuts down, because it can't, it's telling you that whatever this effect is real. So, which I think is a big thing in the whole, a running theme of the whole series, is the power of your own mind to convince you of things true or not. I think is one of the big themes of the book, is that our minds can convince us of some pretty wonky stuff when they want to. So at least for me, I think that was a pretty big, if not theme here, it seems to fill in what's going on. So So we're back to Maru, and we've also got another some other things. So if we look at Issue 7, we don't have the mind management field guide initially. We have
her novel.
We have her novel, this novel on the side called Premeditated, which is a novel. It's not by Maru.
Yeah, no, it's the one she wrote. It's her bestseller.
Right. And so, right. But it's based on this character who will come back later and whose wife will come back later. Mm-hmm. And there's also this running thing on the bottom of the pages that is just crazy. She also gets a letter in the mail. She looks at it. It doesn't seem to be anything of what's going on. Plus, it's Sunday. She shouldn't be getting a letter. And she doesn't understand why she's getting a letter, what's going on. And she starts tracking this letter down. And this is where she comes into, I think it's the ad man.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
This guy who, it turns out, can create advertisements that can affect people's minds and make them do different things. And once you realize that, if you then go back and look as she approaches this building, there's all these signs. And they have contradicting things. One's like "stop you," and one is "don't stop," and one is "keep going," and the shield will stop. And so she's sort of getting subliminal messages, but then she's also getting counter subliminal messages, which you wonder if this is some of. By the time you get to the end, you wonder if this is sort of some message. You also see, I'm guessing that's Lime in the background in a couple of these pictures. In the lobby, in the elevator, and
She goes, that's him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And she meets this guy, the ad man, and he's like, how are you even
alive?
Like, how are you even here? All my things should have stopped you. But then the letter, this letter should have killed you. And she's like, I think she kind of says she didn't even look at the letter, but then she realizes later, reveals to us, she did look at the letter and it didn't do anything to her, which is a clue about her that we don't necessarily mm-hmm. know. And as she's walking away, she's seeing all these signs, fly, travel away, keep moving, travel plans, all these little stuff buried around. And everybody's crying because Lime, who helps to rescue her from this situation, gets her out of there. And the whole time we've got all this stuff from her book, Premeditated, her first book that was a hit, all around the edge. And she meets Lime, who she doesn't remember at this point.
Yeah, from last issue.
Right. She doesn't remember from volume one. The backup story is about this guy who they kind of nicknamed the Hulk, Ferris Farrell. We don't know anything about him. But it turns out that he ends up having the ability that he can see the weak spot in something and punch it. And can basically destroy it. It's kind of like Karnak. Who is it? Karnak, yeah, from the Inhumans. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, and throughout this issue, not only do you have the novel running in the gutter, you have the little pictures at the bottom explaining what a murder note is.
Yeah.
And all the people that die reading it. And yeah, I'm like, that's way too much to read all at once. Like, mm-hmm. I had to go back and read this multiple times because you can't read the page, the gutter, and the bottom. Like,
and I can't read it all and follow it. So I read one and then go back and read the bottoms. Then I go back and read the edges. And it's funny, the murder letter has to be written by a guy blindfolded.
Yeah.
He can't actually look at his own letter or else it will destroy him.
And he doesn't even know what he's writing somehow. Mm-hmm. Like, he doesn't even know what he's writing. He's just writing it. And
yeah, and then so Henry Lime sort of decides what we need to do is if we're going to do this, we've got to get the band back together. We've got to get some mind management agents, this secret organization. We've got to get some of these folks. We've already got me, and now we're going to try to get the Perrier sisters, who are these sisters that could write persuasive fiction. They could write stories that would affect the moods of and actions of different people. And I think they call this thing automatic writing. Do either of you guys really understand exactly what automatic writing means?
I think it was just like free form. Like, they just started writing. And there wasn't premeditation to what they were going to write. It was more like speaking in tongues is how I always thought about it throughout the series.
I thought there was maybe something to it that was sort of like, kind of, they were able to predict the future, but they almost didn't read it while they were writing. Like, it just kind of happened.
The sense I kind of got was it was kind of predictive of the future, except not, it was almost like simultaneous. Like, it was kind of like the events were kind of like being dictated almost. That could be wrong, but that was kind of how I thought about it.
Yeah. Something like that. Because later on, she's, the still living Perrier sister is able to use it to sort of cancel out Duncan's ability to predict the future, because she gets annoyed, which I can see, by him predicting everything that's going to happen. Which, again, I could get annoyed at that.
Yeah, seems like quite a few. Well, you see the Perrier sisters, you see Duncan, and also Henry all have this ability to see the future, but it's not something they can really always control. Duncan is probably the most consistent of them.
Right.
But Henry, he sees the Perrier sister falling off the balcony early on. And then later on in the series, he has a whole, in one of the backups, he has a whole series with his wife where he's predicting the future but can't know.
Right.
So,
Henry's the most powerful of all of these individually.
Yeah.
There are others that have abilities that make them powerful in certain circumstances, but wouldn't be as flexible an agent as Henry can be mm-hmm. because of all of his various abilities. But other people do have specific abilities, which in certain situations can be more powerful. So they get the remaining Perrier sister, and they're battling the whole way. Like, no matter where they are, they've got to do this. And then they get this guy who's like the perfect assassin.
Yeah, with a handgun.
Yeah, he can shoot like things like crazy, insane distances away, and it'll
like he never misses.
Right. Seems like he just shoots and it goes and hits stuff. Like, bounces off birds, goes through a car, bounces off three things, off the corner pocket, off the side rail, and boom, hits you. And he's trying to shoot Maru, and it does all this, but it doesn't kill her. It just nicks her, and which is a mystery. Why is it? How is it the guy who never misses?
You start to set up Maru's powers,
right? So. Right. So they go to Zanzibar and they're looking for clues there, and they're finding things. And along the way, you're getting a little bit more. You're getting more backstory. Then they go get this guy, Danny, at least at this point, seems to be the guy who's got the best deal out of this whole mind management thing. Because he was a singer. He can persuade people with his music and everything. And he's made like millions of dollars. I mean, he's like a millionaire living. I don't remember where he's at, Egypt or somewhere, I think. I
thought he was in Zanzibar, don't they?
I thought they had to go somewhere else after Zanzibar.
Egypt.
Yeah, because I see Egypt. A pyramid.
Yeah. They go to Egypt.
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, hey, everything's great. Oh, man, are you kidding? Sure, I love being here in my whole life.
House blows.
Yeah, nothing ever totally works out for the best. Just in case you're wondering, this isn't going to be a story that's going to end super, super happy for everybody. I just want to preface that right now. If you're hoping that everybody's going to come out of this super, super happy, I'm just going to let you know that you're going to be disappointed on that. Plot lines get wrapped up. You know, you do get a story here that's complete, but it's not happy for everybody. Just to let you know. Just want to be clear about that right now. So, so his house blows up. That's the end of issue 8. Then, Tim, run us through issue 9 a little bit.
You know, 9 is, they're kind of picking up the pieces. But the assassin is still after him. And this is really where you see Maru's powers come out. She starts canceling everybody out. She starts, probably not the first time you see her in this warrior mode, but she starts to mentally influence everything around her. And then they start looking for Shangri-La. That, you know, they start finding all the clues and you get the feeling of the breadcrumbs again, but without that mastermind, which I always kind of read this as Maru knows more. And I'm going to throw out my prediction here is that she's done this all before. You know, she knows where everything is. She knows where all the clues are. That volume 1 wasn't the only thing she did over and over and over. So that's just my prediction, unfounded on anything other than just kind of my gut. But
all right.
She seems to know more without being able to really access it. But yeah, I mean, it's again, yeah. you learn more about, you know, the musician, you know, that's probably one of the, it almost feels like one of the backup stories, but it runs for, you know, 8 pages throughout the story.
Yeah. And there's another clue in there where they're looking at this stuff and everybody else is like, what are you, it's just some symbols.
Symbols, yeah.
And she's like, it's coordinates, it's latitude and longitude. They're like, what are you talking about? Only one who can see through it. Yeah.
You know, and like you get a song written by Matt, you know, in this one, like, man, what can the guy not do?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then obviously more Hulk, Ferris Farrier backups. Which I thought this was the best use of Karnak in a Marvel comic ever. So I like him a lot more than Karnak. So
yeah, and I think we eventually get to, I think they've got to try to get, we get some more of Duncan's backstory.
Yeah, and which realize, carries on to the next issue,
right,
too.
Right, we realize he's, if the the problem is, how do you find a guy who can predict the movements of everything going on around him and who does not want to be found?
Yeah, yeah. They need his help.
Right.
They definitely need him, so.
And I think part of Maru's thing here is not just canceling out his powers, but the thing is, everyone else, I think, is so used to depending on their powers that she's able to think a little logically and realize if you know what the people's powers are, there are ways around it.
Yeah.
And I'm going to go off on a crazy aside here and just for a little bit.
It's your turn.
Okay. I don't know if you guys ever watched this season one of the show Heroes.
No.
Okay. Jeff, did you watch?
I did not.
Okay. So I will tell you that Heroes season one was awesome. The rest of that show was shite. Okay. It was complete, utterly horrible. Okay. But season one, and there's a guy who's like an agent. His job is to go find these people with powers, and they got a bag and tag them. So basically they got a catalog kind of what their abilities are. So he ends up in these situations. Well, he himself doesn't have any powers, but he always can figure out how to get around. He's dealing with the guy with telepathy, so he starts thinking in Japanese. He knows Japanese. Well, the guy who's trying to read his mind doesn't know Japanese, so he can't see around his powers. He convinces this other guy basically to shoot. He tells telepathically this other guy to shoot his daughter, so the guy shoots his daughter, and then he pretends to freak out. Well, it turns out the reason he did it because he knows his daughter can heal from any injury. So he uses their powers in ways that they themselves don't necessarily realize. And in some ways, to me, Maru is kind of doing that here in that she's figured out we randomize things. We do crazy stuff. There's no way to predict it because we don't even know what we're going to do. How can he know what we're going to do? And they're able to use that to track him down, which I thought was a really cool touch.
I was just going to say I really like the way I like the page. I think I don't know how they're in the volumes, but in page 18 of this issue, when Duncan runs into Henry Lon, you see him being surprised for the first time in however long.
Right.
And I just love that moment, especially from the setup earlier in the issue where he's talking about, you kind of go into some of his romantic misadventures that are, caused by his ability to always kind of know what's going on.
Knows what to say. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that moment. I think it's really interesting.
Oh yeah. 100%. And I think in some ways, I think that even kind of intrigues Duncan because I feel like Duncan's kind of bored. He's going through the motions.
Right.
Oh, definitely.
Even when he's in his relationships, like he can woo a woman because he can basically read her mind and know what she wants and everything. And, but then, after a while it becomes predictable and he can even tell when she's ready to move on to somebody else. And to be honest, he doesn't really care. It's fine. I know. It's how it works out. Whatever. And, his life is stable, but fundamentally sad. And so I think he's also looking for something different. I don't think he cares that much about the eraser. I don't think he cares really that there's other stuff going on. I think he just wants something different.
Yeah. Well, there's no consequences to life. So I guess this is interesting. I guess I'll do it.
Right.
Yeah. So.
So they make it to, they're all getting together to try to find the secret mind management base, which is Shangri-La. And so Maru has found the coordinates. They're going there. And even when they get there, they can't see anything at first. But I think Maru is kind of the first person who can sort of see through it because she can see through. Yeah, she can break through the illusion. And there's this great panel where you kind of see just a building, but you also kind of get this sense of what else of what else it would be, which is kind of a classic Matt Kent sort of a thing. Yeah. To bury an image on an image on an image is very, it's very him.
Yeah. As they enter Shangri-La, this is where, you know, you quickly know you hate Henry. This is where you learn that you love Duncan.
Right.
The 2 minutes, you have 2 minutes and then you're going to die. Oh, well, 15 minutes, you're going to go around this corner. And he starts just throwing out this data, you know, and I just love that interaction that he has throughout the series or throughout this issue in particular. But
yeah, and Maru is we also start getting introduced to some of the bad team.
Yep.
And we also, Maru is going through these volumes, these reading volumes, figuring it out, what went on before. And this cycle of she remembers all the way back to her life before, and that it was Henry Lime's actions that ended up killing her family, and you know, all this stuff that all comes up later on. So it's, you know, it's pretty crazy. And
here's where you learn Ferris the Hulk is Bill,
right?
You know, so you're,
that's
like,
right.
Yeah, all of a sudden their team just got a little stronger, you mm-hmm. know. But yeah, the bad side comes in, you know, and they split off, and you get the showdown between all the, you know, the main two parties. So
yeah. And she remembers that she and Bill were friends and kind of romantically aligned back in the day, although both of them have had aspects of their life erased and unerased. And now at the end of this series, at the end of this volume, she and Bill are kind of seemingly sort of going off into the sunset. Yeah. They're leaving from Shangri-La and they're a little snow skier, but then they're on the beach. It's super, we're going off literally into the sunset.
Yeah.
And forget mind management, forget all that. That's all their problem. That's not our problem. And, but Bill can tell.
Well, I mean, they got what they came for.
Right.
She came for data. And she left Henry and Duncan, who she has no real allegiance to.
Correct.
Or reason to like.
Right. They're not likable,
yeah,
is the reason that she may not like them. Yeah, for sure. And so for me, I thought, you know, you could kind of end this. You know, sometimes you get to the end of a movie and it's the end of the movie. You know, okay, like The Matrix. At the end of the first Matrix movie,
it's over.
Which should have been
the end.
The end. Okay, there's still an open door to that story. Like, stories never really end. They just pause. And so he kind of sets it up. He flies off. You don't know what's going to happen to that world, but we've got a complete story of Neo. And it should have been. And it was great. And it was great. And then they went back. Sorry, that's my thing.
Yeah.
That's my thing about The Matrix.
No, I'm with you. I'm with you there.
So anyway, we can tell there's a pause, but you can tell Maru is not done because she hasn't finished the story.
Yeah.
She doesn't know the ending yet. And it's just not in her to let it go. And that's the end of volume two, yeah, man.
Yeah.
Well, I like that.
I really love that.
Go ahead.
Yeah, go, Jeff.
I was going to say, I really love the last page. You get another hint at how powerful everybody thinks she is. And, you know, the second to last panel, you see Henry saying, "We just hope to God, dot, dot, dot." And then the last panel is the eraser, dot, dot, dot. She doesn't pick a side.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say, is that setup. Nobody has any idea what they're going to get from her.
Right. Yeah, they just, if... Yeah, you're not really sure exactly that you want her on your side, because she's not, you can't control her.
Yeah.
But you definitely don't want her on the other side, because she can totally mess you up with her abilities. So I think the powers that be kind of want just them to, let's just keep doing our thing, and that'll be enough. So Yep, for sure. All right, so that's wraps up volume two.
I got one thing I want to talk about. So how many times have we read, watched, just had a story where at the end of it, it all resets and you just, this is an endless cycle. Very few people can pull that off.
Right.
Matt obviously does in volume one. But to come back, issue seven, start of volume two, and do it again and again and again. Like, he, I've just never seen it done this well, where you take such a played out trope of memory wipe or, you know, repeating the cycle. You brought up the Matrix, exact same thing with the Matrix, is this just keeps being done.
Right.
The Matrix did not pull it off. You know,
no.
Matt nails it. Yeah. And I don't know. I can't pinpoint why or how. I just know at the end of volume one, I didn't feel disappointed when he hit the reset button. And at the start of volume two, it was totally paid off that he did it and he keeps doing it. And I feel like he does it again at the end of this one. Like, oh, now Maru knows everything. Like, oh, we're starting over again, you know?
And I think it's because the cycle is different. The second cycle that we see is different than the first cycle in that, you know, the murder letter changes the direction that she heads off. Plus, Lime isn't waiting for her back in wherever he was in China. He's now there because he realizes this is not... I think he realizes this cycle can't go the same next time as it did this time.
Yeah.
There were things here that can't be... I can reset her, but I can't reset everything else that's happened.
And she's starting to break all of those resets.
Right. Yeah, I think I'm totally right.
Right.
Yep, awesome. All right, guys. So that is volume two. So hope you enjoyed it. Go now. Read volume three. It's called The Homemaker. It's another... Man, I love the cover of this volume. And I will tell you, when I started reading this next volume, just as a little teaser, I kept looking, am I reading the same book? Like, it seemed to be completely sideways from where we were before, and it just pays off so great. So so we'll be back with volume three, so take a break and join us next time. All right, thanks, everybody.